Hello, everybody, and welcome into 49ers Live. I'm Joe Finn, joined by voice of the 49ers, Ted Robinson. Ted, what a wild 6 months it's been here in Santa Clara with this organization. I mean, from the time January 1 hits, you finish up a 2-14 season, you blow it all up, and here we are in a much different place.
Joe, I still have a job. You still have a job. I feel good,
cheers,
right?
To that.
Exactly.
Cheers to that.
Now, look, we all know how much change has taken place here in the last few years. And the best news, I think everybody walked away last week from the last mini camp, and now it's summer recess, so to speak. The best news everybody took away from this feels good. It just feels good. That doesn't mean anything yet until there's wins and losses. We all know that. But it's, to me,
it's worth something.
It's the best feeling around here that I've noticed in the building and on the football field since 2011, the first year of Jim Harbaugh, when it was a very similar situation. This franchise was tired of getting beat up, tired of losing. The players were tired of it, and a coach came in and brought a staff with him that instilled a belief that, hey, this is going to get better. And, of course, in 2011, it immediately got better. Now, I'm not going to project that expectation on 2017. That's not fair. But at least as we sit here in June, the feeling to me is very reminiscent of 2011 here.
We'll get into some of those sentiments in this entire offseason recap show of 49ers Live. But first, let's go in the Wayback Machine and check out the timeline of the offseason here in 2017. And so much has transpired. Again, starting in January 1st, head coach Chip Kelly, general manager Trent Baalke, both relieved of their duties. And then January 29th, John Lynch brought in as GM. One of the more shocking moves around the NFL, something that caught a lot of people by surprise, really kept under wraps by Jed York and company. On February 7th, it was Kyle Shanahan named as the head coach of the San Francisco 49ers. Big free agency period this year. 7 free agents on day one. Remember that big press conference in the 49ers Levi's Stadium auditorium with Brian Hoyer, Pierre Garçon and company. Really, the new leaf and the new pieces to this new regime as they try to put their imprint on the roster. April 28th, an exciting first round of the 2017 NFL draft. Landed the 49ers, Solomon Thomas at number 3 overall, and then trading back into the first round to get Reuben Foster at number 31. And then Elvis Dumervil coming here just a couple of weeks ago. So when you look at those moves, and each one making a lot of waves in their own regard, is there something that you look at and would say, this was the most significant point to me in the offseason?
Yeah, I think draft night, to me, look, that's the first competition, so to speak, for the new team, the new regime. And to come away with a trade and still get the player you want in Solomon Thomas, then to get a second player that time will tell, but certainly a player whose talent was respected and coveted by John Lynch more than anyone, that's tremendous. I thought the defensive line pick, and I know there's been the immediate, or at least on April 28th and 29th and 30th, there were some immediate backlashes about, wow, that's 3 straight years you've spent a number one draft pick on your defensive line. Look around the league. Look at how many teams have done that. Look at the Rams, what's been the strength of their team, right? Even though they haven't been a playoff team for a long time, the strength of their team has been having multiple waves of defensive linemen that you can run on the field. And in today's football, I think that's phenomenal. And I thought the Solomon Thomas pick, because of the And I'll tell you something else, Joe. The other thing about Solomon Thomas, and I've met him just a little bit doing some college games around Stanford, but the quality of person he is, I think that was another big element for what Kyle and John wanted to bring in here. And that was very clear at the end of last season that was missing in this locker room. It was a real short on that. And I think what's been done over the last 6 months, 5.5 months, has been to address that very element in the locker room.
I'm going to go a little bit different route. Obviously, that was huge, and I think the adrenaline going on draft night is so exciting because it really is an unknown. You trade back to 3, you get Solomon Thomas, and then at the end of the first round, you get back in at pick number 31, and John Lynch willing and dealing, getting these guys who they rated in the top 5 of their draft board. But for me, the move that really set the tone, when John Lynch got hired as GM, there was this, the John Lynch, hard-hitting safety, broadcaster John Lynch. He's going to be the general manager of the San Francisco 49ers. He's unqualified. He's never done it before. What are the 49ers doing? This guy came out of nowhere. What's happening in San Francisco? And then the very next day, it took not 24 hours later, Adam Peters is brought on. Yeah. And I think it just set the tone that, okay, let's just give this guy a chance because he clearly has a plan. He clearly has a vision. That told me this is a guy who's been thinking about this opportunity, and should he take the job, this is what he wants to look like. This is who he wants on his staff. And my favorite quote of the entire offseason, John Lynch's first conference call with the media, was, I know what I don't know. And that, to me, in a professional sports industry that has so many egos involved, right? I mean, throughout professional sports, not just the NFL, for him to take this job and immediately humble himself and say, listen, I know what I bring to the table, but I also know what I don't know. Never been in a front office. Boom, Adam Peters. Never sat in a GM chair on draft night. Boom, Martin Mayhew. Surrounding himself with the talent to help him thrive as a general manager.
And, Joe, I refer to that as the magnet effect, and it applies to Kyle as well. Kyle Shanahan attracted a terrific staff. And this is going to go back to 2011 to me. It was very reminiscent of what happened in 2011 when a new coach came in here and attracted an excellent staff. So it's the coaching staff, and then it's John Lynch. As you said, there's all of the skepticism that's out there. Clearly, there were a lot of lifers, front office lifers, some of whom were in the mix for the job here, that probably didn't like the fact that somebody walked right in without having paid dues, so to speak. But look who John attracted to work, okay? Those people chose to come. The Adam Peters, the Martin Mayhew's example, chose to come and work here. So that magnet effect to me is probably the strongest credibility statement that could have been made this offseason.
And you saw it not just with the front office additions, but with the roster additions as well. Guys like Pierre Garçon, Kyle Juszczyk, who had teams lining up for their services, they opt to buy into what John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan are selling. So of the newcomers, and again, more than half the roster has been overhauled. The imprint is already there before training camp is even here. Who's a couple names that really caught your eye when they signed with the 49ers?
Yeah, I think that's a great call. And this gets into dangerous territory. And I it's very hard to avoid at some point playing the comparative game. But look at what happened last year in free agency. The 49ers were virtually inactive. And there wasn't a whole lot of questions asked about that. But a team that had a lot of cap space was not viewed by a lot of free agents as an attractive place to go play. That changed this year, right? That changed. And obviously, I thought the first one was Earl Mitchell, when Earl Mitchell signed here. And that was another terrific butt support and buttress to the defensive line. Look, Hoyer and Barkley come in here in the quarterback situation. We all know it's a wide open place right now. Hoyer has cred. I mean, Hoyer's taken teams to the playoffs before, okay? That's a wonderful thing. Pierre Garçon's a veteran. Could he be more of the role that perhaps in the realm of an Anquan Boldin, what Anquan did his last few years in San Francisco, that's possible too. But the fact that there were multiples that came out here to sign, right? And we understand the challenges out here. It's not just the football franchise. It's the cost of living. It's the taxes. These are real world things that free agents confront, right? Because they have options, most of them, to go play in other places where it doesn't cost as much to buy a house and you don't pay tax, or you don't pay nearly as much tax as you do here. The fact they chose to sign here, to me, is another part of that magnet effect.
If you're watching on Facebook or Periscope, be sure to send your questions. We'll get to a couple of those here in a moment as we're recapping a busy 49ers offseason to kick off the 2017 season with training camp just about 6 weeks away. Now, in the doldrums of this is really the only offseason. These 6 weeks right now, yeah, to me, are the only part of the NFL offseason. A few names that I'm really intrigued of. We talked about Elvis Dumerville a little bit and Marquise Goodwin. Those are guys who are so intriguing to me because they have qualities that you just can't find. You can't just pick up a guy with world-class speed. That's a huge addition where put him with Kyle Shanahan, making him a complete receiver, that home run threat that defenses have to key on a play-to-play basis. That, to me, is interesting. And then Elvis Dumerville. And I loved what Kyle Shanahan said. Yes, yada, yada, yada. He's got veteran experience. He'll be a mentor. But no, I mean, that's an added bonus. But we did not bring him here. We would never bring a player here to strictly be a mentor. And that, to me, says, I mean, the 49ers believe he's got good football left. And, you, again, yeah, in the same way of Marquise Goodwin's speed, You don't just go out to the open market and find a pass rusher, a coveted position, a league that requires you to get to the quarterback. You don't find a guy out there with the pedigree and resume of Elvis Dumervil. And so to add him at this juncture of the offseason, again, you don't know what it's going to look like in terms of sack totals. But the possibilities, again, make you think that it could be a big move.
And the wisdom, I think, that Kyle Shanahan and his staff will be to make sure that, in essence, you're going to look at a player who has a certain amount in the tank at the start of the year. There's a certain amount of snaps there. I think that's a realistic way to look at it. They're going to make sure they marshal that snap count so that they get whatever the number is, 400, 500 quality snaps from Elmas Dumervil. Put him in the positions where he can actually contribute, where he can do what he does best.
Absolutely.
And not have what we saw with DeForest Buckner last year, where he played 8,000 snaps and was out there for every play. But, look, there is... You can't come off 5'11 and 214 back-to-back and not have needs at almost every place, and this franchise does. One big one to me was pressuring the passer, and that last year was incredibly apparent. So adding someone like this with a resume like this, to me, if you want to look at a comparative, it's what Dwight Freeney has done for a couple of teams the last few years as a veteran, to go in there late in his career and, again, just do that. In essence, be the designated pass rusher. I think every 49er fan hopes that's exactly what Dumervil brings here.
And you can never have too many horses ready to pin their ears back and get after the quarterback. And so that leads me, you mentioned the name DeForest Buckner, and I'm going to put you on the spot here in a second. I'll go first. With the player you're most excited to watch in 2017, and for me, I have two guys on defense. One is Jimmy Ward, getting back to his natural position of safety. Yeah. But I think that experience as a nickel corner, as an outside corner, will serve him well in this role. But also DeForest Buckner, and you said, and then Jeff Scanina, the team's defensive line coach, is very clear. We're going to rotate everybody. And there's no way DeForest Buckner is playing 1,000 snaps this year, which will serve him well. I mean, he talked to the media last week and said, I tapped my helmet once to say I was tired. Nobody came in for me, and I never asked again. But you know, you can't not be gassed at the end of games when you're playing every single snap, especially when the defense was as long on the field for as long as it was last year. But what he can do, taking that step from that rookie season to your sophomore campaign, what he's able to accomplish in a one-gap system, beat your man, get to the quarterback, I think Defoe could have a really promising year this year.
Yeah. I'll tell you a couple of guys on defense that I'm looking at. Eric Armstead. And Eric last year basically sacrificed the year. He had an issue that needed to be fixed. He chose not to do it last offseason, tried to play through it, and couldn't. So it was really a lost year for him, and that was unfortunate. So now it's been fixed. He's healthy. The 49ers, it's year three now. They need to see it. They need to see the player that they invested a first-round draft pick in. And the other player to me is Rashard Robinson. And I just think this is position clearly of huge need for the 49ers at corners, and Rashard Robinson showed you last year the flashes and the ability to be eventually be a top corner. This is a guy that I think now, given the loss of Brock in the offseason, he's basically your top corner coming back, right? He's only a second year guy. Yep. He needs to step that. And this is the other guy, 53, Bowman. I think Bowman is essential, Joe, for the fans. I mean, he's essential for the football team, we know that. But it's important for the faithful, coming off the years that they've had and with the amount of turnover that they've seen, to have somebody that the fans want somebody they can latch onto. And they know, they associate Navarro with good times here, with a great player. I mean, Navarro was on a career course that was going to parallel Pat Willis and probably was a Hall of Fame track until that horrendous injury in Seattle. If Navarro can come back and be close to that player again, coming off a second injury, I think that's a great boost for the 49er faithful in this first year of the Shanahan Lynch era.
Yeah, we know what the monster, as the faithful love to call him, means to the team on the field. But like you said, the intangibles, the sentiment around him, the mystique of 53 is huge. Let's go to John, who has a question for us. Who appears to be the front runners in the corner and tight end position battles? You kind of alluded to it with Rashard Robinson at corner. I think you've got a great battle at the number two corner spot with Keith Reeser and Dante Johnson in the nickel with Will Redmond, a third-round pick last year, and Quan Williams.
Yeah, you know, Will Redmond's an interesting case because here's a guy, again, from another time was the injury draft pick, the basic redshirt year. Now we're going to see. I saw Witherspoon play a couple of games for Colorado last year. He's very impressive. He was very impressive. And I'm hoping that he can make the adjustment more quickly than, because there's a need here to make it more quickly than you might otherwise ask. Tight end is a fascinating position.
Fascinating.
And
look, underrated, if not maybe the best position battle going into
well,
camp.
I mean, I'll just say it, watching a little bit in free agent, or watching a little bit rather in the mini camps, et cetera. Three tight ends coming back. I don't know if any of them can feel terribly secure. I mean, and I'm a huge Garrett Celek fan, watching Garrett's play and contribution over the last couple of years. But you watch the minicamp practice, you watch George Kittle just jumps out. I mean, he was the one player last watching last week's practices that just jumped out at me. And Hikutini's an undrafted free agent that I'm sure that you bring him in here, you fear that if you don't keep him, he's going to get gobbled up by somebody right away.
Yep.
Logan Paulson's a veteran that has some familiarity with Kyle Shanahan's system. So I'm just saying there's all kinds of reasons to wonder, could there be a complete turnover, as crazy as that sounds, at that position?
And at the same time, yeah. Vance McDonald, three touchdowns of 60-plus yards. I mean, the speed at that position. And last year with an offense that had, you know, that struggled, frankly, to make big plays, especially in the passing game, Vance McDonald was a source that, you know, oftentimes came up with a big play. And so you're right. I mean, it's an incredibly intriguing position group.
And if I jump in on that, Joe, that there's been a lot of, the rearview mirrors and the hindsights are working in the offseason a lot. And there's been a lot of question about the Vance McDonald contract. Last year, you said it, this team was so lacking of weaponry on offense. It was glaring. It smacked you across the face on every play. And Vance was one of the few players on the team that had the ability to make a play anytime he touched the ball. Now, we can all sit here and debate how often that happens, how many missed opportunities. Those are all fair questions. But the point was he had the ability to make plays. And with a team that had so much cap space, I think they were making a gesture basically saying, look, we're going to try to keep one of our own, hope that Vance continues to develop and becomes the player that has always been projected, and screaming need for that to happen. Now, of course, that contract was given out prior regime, new people come in, could be an entirely new thought process. But I think it's somewhat misleading to look back at that contract now and not understand the context and the time in which it was given.
Absolutely. We have a great question from Steve here. Before we give our final thoughts on the offseason, as we look ahead now to training camp and what's to come in August, and again when players report in July 27th. But a great question here in a position group we haven't touched on yet. From Steve, could we see a timeshare at running back? We talked about the tight ends and the depth there and the wealth of young talent. You could say the same thing at the running back position with Carlos Hyde, but you bring in Tim Hightower, a guy who played very well against the 49ers last year for the New Orleans Saints. You have Joe Williams, a guy who Shanahan said he had to have. Matt Breda, let me tell you, undrafted free agent, he is fast, straight wheels on this guy. And so you have, you know, Kyle Juszczyk as well. Where does he fit in terms of roster spots? Mm-hmm. And so what do you see from that position group as it stands right now?
It's funny, we're looking at Juszczyk, and that's, of course, all of us of some vintage around here are thinking, you know, we haven't seen that position since Bruce Miller. And Bruce Miller was an instrumental player in those three straight championship years here. We haven't seen that position since. So now Juszczyk brings it back. The name, you said to me, this Breda, I hadn't seen him until last week. Ooh, he caught my eye, too, for that very, very reason. But to the original question, Joe, how many teams in the NFL today just go with one back? I mean, Ezekiel Elliott was that guy in Dallas last year, right? That's, to me, the exception, hardly the rule. The rule is to share the position. Second element to that is Carlos Hyde hasn't played a full season. And I don't know how the 49ers can, in my mind, I don't know how you approach this season expecting Hyde to play 16 games. You hope it happens, but it hasn't. So I'm not sure how realistic it is to expect it. Therefore, you're looking at, is it the veteran Hightower or Joe Williams, who I, again, saw several times in person last year at Utah. Awfully, awfully good. And then you factor in something that hadn't happened as much here the last few years, using running backs as receivers.
Yep.
I haven't seen a lot of that here. Well, Kyle's offense from Atlanta, you know, you saw how well he used his running backs as receiving weapons. How does that factor into the group that the 49ers have assembled here.
And I think the other factor that, plays into this is, who is going to be the return man? Yeah. You had Jeremy Curley last year at punt returners. Capri Bibbs, they traded for him on draft day, likely as a guy who will play into the mix and maybe the kick return game. He had some success last year for the Broncos with a couple of big returns. And so, again, these different factors with special teams, return game, playing multiple positions, how do they impact roster spots? You know, do you count Kyle Juszczyk as a half a tight end? Does that take a roster spot from the tight end group? Do you count him as a half a running back? Does that take a roster? You know what I mean? So the puzzle that is yet to be put together, this 90-man roster that's got to be trimmed to 53, obviously we're a long ways from it, but it's going to be fascinating how they split hairs coming down the stretch.
And so here's a name. You mentioned the return game. Here's another name that to me is intriguing, Bruce Ellington. All right, so Bruce is another guy that just has not been able to stay healthy as a 49er, but they invested a fairly high draft pick in him some years back. Now it's a new regime. So draft pick status no longer matters here. And Bruce is a guy who has been a return man, has shown some capabilities as a return man. Does he get a swing? Because there is no, I'm guessing right now, I'm not sure if I would say anybody is a front runner. But at a wide receiver position that it seems to be a little more crowded on paper than it has been the last couple of years, how does Bruce fit in? And that, to me, Joe, circles all the way back to where we started this, in that this is a new vibe, a much better vibe. And I'll echo something that Joe Staley said to me on our radio network the last week of the season. And Joe was very adamant in calling out the lack of presence in the locker room, and he included himself. He says I'm as big a part of this, the lack of leadership, and that draft position, school you played at, there's no entitlement here, and there was a little bit of that creeping into the 49er locker room. Well, when you change the management regime, right, to me, you've swept all that away. It no longer matters where you were drafted, what school you played at, because these people in charge here didn't do that, had nothing to do with that. So, again, just going off what Joe said, I think that's probably a very good thing. And to me, it's going to factor into players who were drafted here and have had places on this roster the last three, 4 years, probably have good reasons right now to not feel as secure.
And back to Joe, affirming it last week, you know, when Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch laid out their expectations for the team, accountability was a big thing, and Joe said, when we're in meetings, he'll call out myself, he'll call out Navarro Bowman, just like he'll call out an undrafted rookie. No one is exempt from the standard that is being set here in San Francisco, which leads me to, we've laid out all the optimism. and as there should be, it's been a really exciting 6 months here, and you can feel the culture shifting, again, in the building and on the field, as Ted said. So, win totals aside, what are fair expectations for the 2017 season?
Wow. Yeah, that's... We've gone down this road. You've been a part of it here the last couple of years, and it's hard because I think a lot of folks like myself have been burnt the last couple of years. Last year, I thought the bare minimum was going to be this would be a much better offensive team. No one could have envisioned 2-14, and we weren't really much better on it. There was a slight improvement on offense, but it was not significant. As you see the opponents, that's going to be an intriguing slate of opponents, especially the Jaguars, Titans, Panthers, my goodness. So schedule factors into this, but again, Joe, I'm going to repeat one thing that is carried over from last year with Kyle here. How can we not believe this is going to be a significantly better offensive team? The personnel, you know, I think if you looked at personnel, where the prior investments have largely been on the defensive side here. There's the high draft picks, the coveted players are pretty much the defensive guys. You know, the offense, it's been a lot of the free agency during the offseason, a lot of players that Kyle and sure and John looked at and said, this will work for us, even if it's short term, until we can really steer this thing the way we want. But I still have to believe this franchise will be significantly better on offense. It has to be better on defense. I mean, last year was historically bad. It was difficult to watch. It was difficult for fans to watch. I totally understand that. It was tough for me to call.
It was tough for the player.
Exactly.
I mean, it's everybody.
It was just, there was a hopelessness on defense that cannot be replicated. That has to be better this year. And to watch a group of players, and Joe is that way on the offensive side. But I'll say, Joe, on the defensive side, Ahmad Brooks, Navarro, Eric Reed's another name I'm intrigued by. Guys that were here when this team won and have been here when they lost. You know, Ahmad, Joe, go back to, they've gone through two cycles. They've gone through losing, winning, losing. Eric came here when it was still winning, but now he's experienced a couple of down years. To see them and hear them re-energized, I think that's a key word to me. It's the re-energizing of guys that are, they're proven players and that have been part of winning. And that belief that was instilled in 2011, that I feel the beginning seeds of being replanted this year. Those are the guys. So Eric Reed's going to play a position this year. As you said, Jimmy Ward's going to play back. And if we want to use the Seattle analogies, it sounds like Jimmy Ward is going to be Earl Thomas. And that's not a fair bar either. But that kind of a player, that kind of a position, is Eric Reed going to be more of a Cam Chancellor type of player? Eric seems comfortable with that. Hey, this is a big year for Eric Reed. It's a big year. And if he can play that kind of position with that sort of skill, it's going to make this defense a ton better.
That, folks, is what they call a Ted Robinson walk-off home run. Beautifully said. I got nothing to add. You're going to enjoy your summer, I'm sure, a little bit. I know you got tennis on the calendar coming for you, but what's ahead for your next 5 weeks before we start the wildness of training camp?
Well, a little bit of Olympic-related work and then a trip to Alaska. Ooh. Never been. 10-day cruise to Alaska the first part of July. So that's the last, you know, shutdown, as everybody else does. Joe's story, 2 years ago, my wife and I went on a cruise the beginning of July. We're on a cruise in Italy. And who shows up on the cruise? Andrew Luck and his lady. And then who do we bump into in a town walking in Italy? Vic Fangio and his lady. So I'm saying it's that time of year, exactly, where the football world stops. It's the last break. And everybody here tells coaches, staff, go, get away. And once we come back in late July, it's all in.
Kyle Shanahan said it best. I'm going to Mexico. Yeah. I'm putting my watch and cell phone somewhere else. I'm going to go to sleep when I want to go to sleep. I'm going to wake up when I want to wake up. And everything else in between is immaterial. Ted, as always, man, I appreciate your time and your insight.
Great. Good seeing you, Joe. Look forward to this year.
We appreciate you joining us here on 49ers Live. We'll be back soon. Enjoy your summers. Get out, enjoy the California sunshine or wherever you may reside. For Ted Robinson, I'm Joe Fan. Take care, everybody.